Thank you, Dave. We always try to do something a little bit different, and we're joined now by David McCloskey, a former CIA analyst, author of The Seventh Floor, his third novel, and he has been there and done that. And I want to invite the audience in here at 504-260-1870, the Oakland Heart Jeweler Talk and Text line, as we begin the conversation. If you have any questions or comments about the CIA or tradecraft or what's real or what's not, text them in and I'll pass them along. With that, we welcome in David McCloskey. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well, Tommy. Thanks for having me on.
I read a ton of stuff for work, and your book was the first novel I read in a long time, and I had to suspend my disbelief in a second because I was starting to fact check everything, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, there's a novel now, hang on a second. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I got to tell you that. It really was very enjoyable, and I'm looking forward to now reading the first two. Tell me about, how does a CIA analyst become a novelist?
Well, it was certainly a bit of a roundabout path. You know, I was in for a little under 10 years and never had the thought that I would leave and start writing. But most of my time while I was at CIA, I was working on the Middle East and in particular on Syria. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that was the topic for my first book, Damascus Station. And, you know, that period working on Syria really was an emotional one for me in many respects. You know, I had lived there, worked on it, and you just watched this whole country, you know, fall apart in the middle of the civil war. And so for me, as I left the agency, writing was a way to sort of come to terms with that and to process it. And, you know, I did that for a while before I ever thought about publishing anything. It was just kind of a way to sort of understand what I thought about the world. And at some point, I sort of straightened myself out and said, how do I write something that not only I want to write, but that other people want to read? And the books have come out of that process.
What I read, and I presume what you've written in all three of your books, is real, but it's set in it's real tradecraft, it's real processes, et cetera, but it's set in a fictional setting, accurate?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, I think the books have now dealt with very, very different kind of geopolitical settings, right? The first one was Syria, the second one was Russia. This most recent one, The Seventh Floor, is kind of present-day Langley and kind of the CIA with a bit of Russia thrown in. So there's different settings, but I think consistently throughout them, I'm really trying to get the CIA right. You know, there's a lot of really wonderfully entertaining spy fiction out there that doesn't even really try to deal realistically with the tradecraft, much less with, you know, kind of the culture, the bureaucracy, the moral ethic of the place, right? I find that stuff endlessly fascinating and really try in every book, as much as I can responsibly, of course, to really bring the readers into that world, to show them how the CIA actually operates, what are the people like that work there, what does an actual intelligence operation look like, soup to nuts, how do they work? You know, I want to bring readers into that inner ring and show them kind of a bit of the secret world that we don't normally see.
Without giving away any secrets, and along those lines, does the CIA have to vet any of your work?
They do. Yeah, they do. I am required to send anything I write about, you know, CIA, tradecraft, anything I worked on while I was inside the agency, I have to send to them, to a group called the Publication Review Board. And they read everything, they determine if there's anything sensitive in there, and then redact it out if it is, you know. And it's very almost amusing sometimes to deal with them because they send everything back. For some reason, you know, I send them a Word document. When it comes back to me, it's all capitalized. It's in, you know, dozens of PDF files. And best of all, it's literally redacted with a black highlighter. So it kind of looks like it's come out of, you know, a time machine from 1965. But they have so far been flexible in working with me, and I've never had to really change a story or change a plot because of any redactions from CIA.
And what I love about the novel I read, I want to read the first two, is that it really does expose, and I always did have this feeling, and I've always been fascinated by this kind of work and the tradecraft involved, the hall of mirrors that you people live in, right? Because I don't know how you determine what's real and what's not. And one thing that stood out to me in the book was detail and attention to detail, and how I guess that helps you with a story if you focus on details of any one thing.
Yeah, you know, it's...
if that makes sense, if I'm presenting it properly.
No, yeah, it feels... Look, I think they're novels, right? They're in spy fiction, so the paramount, the goal, the objective, right, is for the reader to come into this world and to consume the story, ideally, you know, sacrificing sleep and family time to do so, because they're just so pulled into the world. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you have to set a groundwork or sort of a foundation of, in my opinion, authenticity or realism, obviously to the characters, to the geopolitics, but because it's a spy novel, to the tradecraft and the detail of how CIA actually functions and what operations actually, how they actually are conducted, right? And if I don't get those little details right, you, the reader, at some point, even if you're not part of this world, you're going to sort of sniff it out, and you're going to know that it's not grounded in reality. And at some point, you might say, well, I'll try another world. I'll go read something else. So I think getting those details right down to, like, the level of, okay, how do CIA officers, when they're trying to move around to spot surveillance, how do you do that? What are the processes for that? What are the techniques? What does it feel like to do that? I'm trying to bring to life kind of the biology of it, the smells of it, the taste of it, the sensation. So you, the reader, are sort of drawn into that world as well.
And I think you do a great job. And I don't think I'm giving anything away here. I'm talking about this part, the section where Sam is in at the Gator Farm and he's trying to memorize every detail. And I guess I'm thinking about the tradecraft that's involved there. How do agents keep their story straight? And when I mentioned Hall of Mirrors, how do you know what's real and what's not? Because in this novel especially, you talk about, you know, there's a mole and there have been agents and counteragents. How do you know that who you're running is not running you? I don't know how you know who to trust.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that is some of the fun of these types of books, is that you don't, you know, and really the premise of The Seventh Floor is essentially there is a Russian mole or double agent operating in the upper reaches of Langley on the seventh floor, which is kind of the executive suite where the director works. You know, who is it, right? And the main character, Artemis Proctor, and Sam, who you mentioned, are investigating this kind of short list of suspects. So it's a bit of a whodunit. But of course, to your point, Tommy, like, we don't know. We don't know who to trust.
But all I mean, in the field, I guess. What I'm getting at, David, is in the field, how do you know, and I don't want you to give away any secrets or anything, obviously, but how do you separate what's real from what's not? How do you keep that straight in your mind?
Yeah. Well, it's hard. I mean, you know, and when you're dealing with humans who you've potentially recruited to supply you with secrets, you know, it's sort of stock and trade in the business to say that most of these people have a bit of a screw loose. Mm-hmm. And so there's a constant effort to test and vet, to understand if this person that you've recruited is actually the real deal. Giving the people polygraphs, checking their information against other sources, giving them tests that they might not even understand or tests, but that allow you to monitor them to understand if they're doing what they said they would do. All of these things sort of are put together, you know, to understand if the agent or the asset that we've recruited is actually under our control or influence or producing things that are true and real. And many times, you know, the picture can be very complicated, where in some cases assets provide things that are, you know, legitimate intelligence, and then they turn around a few months later and they're sort of, you know, making things up because they want more money, or, you know, they want, you know, your approval. It's a very tricky business where you're constantly dealing with the gray, not black and white.
Can anybody really keep a secret?
Yes, you know, people can, not everybody, and certainly not all the time, but, you know, most of the agency officers that I work with are, you know, exceptional at compartmentalizing and keeping secrets, or sort of knowing what are the secrets to keep, right, and what can be shared. But yes, they're out there. They're a rare breed, but they're out there.
When it comes to intelligence gathering, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. We're talking to David McCloskey, former CIA analyst. His newest book is The Seventh Floor. It's a fun read. We're going to talk about gathering intel and the ways officers do that, open source intelligence, human intelligence. We spoke at one point to James Olson, a former chief of counterintelligence, and he mentioned at one point he and his family had to leave because they were compromised, and I don't know how you can have a real life and a CIA life as well, but you all managed to do it. If y'all have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along when we come back on WWL. We're talking to David McCloskey, former CIA analyst, author of The Seventh Floor. That's his newest book. His first two are, I have in front of me here, Damascus Station and Moscow X. He is a former CIA analyst, former consultant at McKinsey & Company, and we love picking his brain. The book is very enjoyable, and David, it was so fun to read something that's not a policy paper or a news story or something else. I got to tell you, how do people get the books?
You can get them pretty much anywhere books are sold. You can get them at Barnes & Noble. You can get it at Amazon. You can get it at IndieBound. And it's in audio book, ebook, hardcover. So pretty much any format, any place you get your books, you can find it there.
And the name of this one is The Seventh Floor. Somebody texted in and said, in your opinion, David, what film or TV series comes closest to the reality of CIA agents and actions?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a tough question because there isn't any one that I think does it exceptionally well. One I will say that gets it pretty close is actually a French series called Le Bureau, mm-hmm. which does a great job with the sort of office politics of an intelligence agency, the bureaucracy, the relationship between headquarters and the field, which is always a point of tension. So Le Bureau does a great job. Some American, listeners will probably remember the show The Americans mm-hmm. from about a decade ago about Russian illegals operating in the States. I thought that show did a great job with the street tradecraft, disguises, things like that, that actually are a part of the intelligence business. Another one that I think does a great job with sort of the psychology of working under deep cover is the Netflix show called The Spy, mm-hmm. which is about an Israeli officer under non-official cover in Syria back in the 60s. That show does a fantastic job showing just how difficult it is for somebody to sort of stay undercover for a very long period of time in a very hostile place. Those would be three that I would offer up as good examples of, you know, sort of the mentality and the tradecraft and the operations of the spy business.
So how do you manage to have a real life and an agency life? Because, you know, I guess the people that are killed in action with the CIA have just a star in the wall, right? And we never do find out their names accurate.
Some of them over time have become sort of public.
I guess what I'm saying is there are a lot of heroes that make a big difference in the security of this nation that we never know about. That's accurate?
Yeah, That's absolutely true.
So along those lines, tell me about the sacrifices of the people, and how can you have a real life in addition to an agency life? I don't know how you could do that.
Well, I think it really is hard, and in particular, if you are a case officer who is out there in the field actually trying to recruit spies and run spies, that is it's exceptionally challenging to actually have a normal existence and do that at the same time. And frankly, it's the reason why, it's a very hard job. It's very hard on families. The divorce rate in particular for case officers is sky high. It's exceptionally hard. And, you know, it's sort of doubly hard in many respects because there really isn't public acknowledgement for what you're doing. You know, it really is a shadow business. And so the people who are doing that every day, these kind of secret servants, you know, they do a tremendous amount for the safety and security of our country and really don't get many plaudits for it at all. But it's very hard. It's very challenging to maintain, I think, a kind of normal existence when, you know, everything you're showing to the outside world is actually sort of a deception, right, to hide the reality that you're working for CIA.
It's not an overstatement to say that the work of the CIA has prevented wars and attacks, right?
No, absolutely not an overstatement. That's absolutely true.
Tell me about how does one become a CIA agent? I know you mentioned the farm, right? That's where they train CIA agents?
The farm is where they would do the training for case officers, absolutely. You get into CIA through a number of different routes, some of which are very normal. You know, I mean, I was recruited out of my college as a 19 and 20-year-old to actually join the CIA as an intern, if you can believe it. I took my first polygraph when I was 19. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people come in through school. It's kind of a typical route. Others would come in, you know, later in life after they have some work experience, or in particular, if they have a technical skill, you know, particularly with, you know, coding, let's say, or if they've, you know, written their PhD thesis on, you know, Vladimir Putin, right? I mean, these are the kind of specialists that we're looking for. So there's no really one route in, but it is very sort of dependent on the type of job that they're recruiting you for. I mean, the CIA is a very big place. There's all kinds of people there, from the folks who are actually out there recruiting spies all the way in to people who are doing a lot of the tech stuff. So it's a big place that's recruiting all over, and oftentimes quite openly, to try to find the talent that we need to run, you know, a spy agency in the 21st century.
If you had to pick a quality that a case officer had, I guess I'm using a phrase right, somebody out in the field, that's right, case officer?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Quality, would it be nerves of steel? Would it be an excellent memory? What would you say? Or maybe a couple of them, qualities.
Yeah, I think you've hit two spot on. You know, you need to be able to approach risk with courage and boldness, and you need to be able to, I mean, you know, you'll see in the novels, I try to render this effectively, the ability to catalog a massive amount of information in your mind and hold it there, you know, really matters a lot. The other thing I would add to that list is there is a trade-off or sort of a balance between needing people who are, you know, kind of adrenaline junkies to a degree. I mean, that helps, but you also need to be able to balance that with the ability to appropriately assess risk. And so you need people who are not going to, you know, skydive without the parachute, let's say, right? And you kind of also need people who are good with people, who get how people work and are able to assess them quickly to understand how you might, or if it's even possible, to move someone to sharing a secret with us that they shouldn't. Those are all very unique skills, and I think they tend to be what the agency looks for when you're thinking about the people who you want, you know, recruiting spies.
A lot of tensions in the Middle East right now. How much of the Israeli response, how much is the United States response, prevention, preparation based on intelligence that's being gained on the ground?
Well, I mean, I think on the Israeli side of things, you know, just if we took the pager attack, we took the, you know, decapitation of Hezbollah's leadership over the past month, that has all been enabled by intelligence gathering probably over years in Syria, in Iran, in Lebanon, to map that network to understand who's who, who reports to who lives where, how do they get there, where do they have meetings. I mean, very specific details would have been required for, you know, for Mossad and the IDF to be able to to conduct these attacks so precisely. That is all enabled by an intelligence picture. It's all enabled by massive investments in time and resources that probably go back well over a decade. So, and that's all unseen. You know, we just see the strikes. We just see the pagers blowing up, but we don't really see all the legwork that went into it. And I think it's the same. I mean, you know, it's really the same on the air defense picture, let's say, to take down, you know, these drones and missiles that are arriving in Israel. I mean, a massive investment of technology, of intelligence resources over a long period of time to be able to create that kind of defense and deterrence. I mean, and this is, you know, it's wild because the public just, you don't see this stuff until something pops above the surface or something blows up. But there's a tremendous amount of detailed legwork that goes into each and every one of these operations, and that sort of undergirds, right, this whole sort of shadow war that has burst into the open in the Middle East over the past year.
I enjoyed your book thoroughly. I could talk to you for 25 hours about this straight. David McCloskey, former CIA analyst, author of The Seventh Floor. You can find it at any bookstore. And, man, I'm going to tell you, it was a very enjoyable read. Thank you for writing it. And I'll check out the first two, Damascus Station and Moscow X. A pleasure to talk to you. Thank you, David.
Likewise, Tommy. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. David McCloskey, former CIA analyst, and the book is called The Seventh Floor. We'll take a break, talk to Jeff Nowak when we come back. WWL Saints sideline reporter, 9:36, 24 till 10, traffic now, WWL.